Today's moviegoers sure love their superheroes, and the folks behind the enterprises Marvel and DC Comics are taking full advantage of that specific brand of fan adoration. Hi, I'm Dan Webster, host of Movies 101, and on this week's show, Nathan Weinbinder and I will discuss a pair of movies with comic book roots, the recently released newest version of Wonder Woman, and the second in a popular comic adventure series, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Plus, we'll throw in our dos centavos concerning the latest in Ridley Scott's Alien series, Alien Covenant. So don't touch that dial, because Movies 101 is coming up next, right here on Spokane Public Radio.
Hey, it's Fred Newman. You know what comes to my mind when I think of the word sustaining? You're moving, you're going a long way for a long time. You're the one with the map and the directions, and you're in control there because you are a Spokane Public Radio sustaining member. It's a word, sustaining, that leads directly to the future. Sustainers are members who choose to support the programs they value with a long-term commitment. Be a part of SPR's future and become a sustaining member today.
Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Nathan Weinbinder, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that likes fantasy about as much as Chris Pratt likes his sight gags. And if you've ever watched any of Pratt's trademark snack videos on YouTube, you know that the actor loves to joke around. Pratt is the star of one of the movies that Nathan and I will be talking about this week, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. We'll also discuss the new Wonder Woman, a movie starring the stunning Gal Gadot and directed by Patty Jenkins. And then we'll reveal our verdict on Alien Covenant, the continuation of the Alien franchise as directed by veteran filmmaker Ridley Scott. Before we get started, we need to note that our resident diva, Mary Pat Truthard, is still on her European sojourn and so won't be able to add her comments on anything, but especially on the movie we'll begin with, the latest version of a story that began way back in October 1941. It was on the eve of World War II and then during it that the comic book version of Wonder Woman emerged. Over the years, in comics, television shows, and in movies, her character and her costume have evolved to reflect the mores of each succeeding generation. This latest version, based on a story by producer Zack Snyder and others, and written by veteran television writer-producer Alan Heinberg, was directed by Patty Jenkins, perhaps best known as the writer-director of the 2003 drama Monster, which won Charlize Theron an Oscar. In one sense, this new Wonder Woman is a kind of throwback, focusing on the title character's birth as the Amazon Princess Diana, her relationship with the American pilot Steve Trevor, and her subsequent fight with Trevor and his buddies against the German forces, not of World War II, but World War I. In another, it is a contemporary study of the role of capable women struggling to prove themselves in a world ruled by men who consider women to be the weaker gender. Jenkins is an adept filmmaker, even if some of her scenes go on a bit long, and even if the trope of depicting Germans as the enduring villains has become a bit dated. The film's strength comes from keying on the title character's compassion for humanity, even as she, in the person of actress Gal Gadot, can kick butt with the best superheroes ever imagined. Chris Pine, who has a good comic sense, is decent in the secondary role, but this movie belongs to Jenkins and to Gadot, and is far better than maybe we had any right to expect.
And you should say it's better than we had expected, not because of Wonder Woman herself as a character, but because of DC Comics and its spotty reputation in the cinematic realm, because the last couple features they've put out were Batman v Superman, which is where Gal Gadot made her debut as Wonder Woman, and Suicide Squad.
And she was the best of that part. I would say probably 5 minutes in that movie, and she was the best thing in it.
And both of those movies were really bad. And Wonder Woman is quite good. I was happy to see that it actually succeeded. And it is too bad that Mary Pat's not with us, because since Wonder Woman has been released, I've read some really great essays online from women film critics and women writers talking about the importance of Wonder Woman based on them when they were kids seeing it on TV, maybe the Linda Carter version in comics,
or
and now this version.
Or on the cover of Ms. Magazine.
Sure. And honestly, this movie didn't hit me the way that it hit, I think, a lot of women in the audience, both just regular filmgoers and film critics, because I think this movie represents something a lot bigger than just the next superhero property. And so here we are, a couple of bros talking about Wonder Woman. And so we're not going to really be able to approach it from that angle. But as a straightforward origin story, which this is quite good. And I think, like you said, a lot of it has to do with Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. She is perfectly cast in this movie.
Perfectly.
I think that Chris Hemsworth and Chris Evans have the same kind of approach, because this movie is basically a fish out of water comedy. You've got this Amazon warrior princess coming to Britain in the 19-teens, I guess it would be in the teens. And, you know, she doesn't understand that you can't just walk around with a giant sword. And
in so many ways, she's naive. And yet at the same time, she's ultimately the one with the most wisdom.
So that, as I was saying, with Captain America and Thor, the two Chrises, they kind of had to play dumb but knowing at the same time. Right. And the nice twist on that formula here in Wonder Woman is that she's naive, but she's never dumb. In fact, she knows more about humanity and about the world at large than any of the human characters that she's in contact with. And so I thought that was a nice change to the formula. And like any superhero movie that we've complained about in the past, this has problems in terms of its structure. I think that the third act is nowhere near as fleet and funny and entertaining as the first two. It develops into a pretty standard big bad fight. Of course, the difference here is that it's Wonder Woman pretty much by herself fighting Ares, the god of war, and she's picking up tanks and throwing them, and that was kind of cool to see.
And coming into her power, coming into her own, figuring out who she is, because the other part of her whole story is she doesn't know who she is, and no one's going to tell her. Because they're afraid that if she knows who she is, that she'll attract the attention of Ares. And she has to figure this out for herself.
And she also doesn't know herself in relation to these human characters, right? No. How she's supposed to relate to them. There is a scene, though, a really, really terrific scene near the middle of this movie. She's down in the no man's land in the trenches.
MacGuffin village,
and she,
It's
true. And she kind of comes, you know, bombarding at the bad guys and takes out this sniper. And that's really a triumphant moment. And I think that Jenkins does a really good job
with that
material.
My favorite scene is involving that same sequence, but that's when she's in the trenches and they're saying, "We can't do this." She's going, "Well, let's go get him." And they say, "No, we can't."
And she
also wants to help the people. We've been here for 4 years, and you can't just run out there. They'll be shooting at you. And she said, "Well, maybe you can't, but I can."
Yeah.
And there's that scene where you just see her legs, because she's taken off all these clothes and she's got the Wonder Woman, and she goes off.
The
and
armor.
It's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's such a great scene.
It really is. I mean, we do sort of have pretty typical villains du jour in this movie in the form of Danny Houston, who is who really relishes his dialogue here. It's like he's being paid by the syllable or something like that. I mean, just the way that he wraps his mouth around this dialogue. And then a Spanish actress named Elena Anaya, who plays the wonderfully named Dr. Poison. And she's developing this gas that will basically melt gas masks. So it will basically destroy the other side.
It's mustard gas
and
on steroids.
Yeah, right. And she's got this face mask because she has a facial deformity. And I don't know if you remember the movie The Skin I Live In, the Pedro Almodovar film, but she was the woman with the mask in that film, his riff on Eyes Without a Face. I don't know if Patty Jenkins is an Almodovar fan, but I just took that as a nice little nod to that.
Well, she might be a
movie.
Fan. Somebody might be a fan of the HBO series Boardwalk Empire also.
Oh, sure.
Because there was one of the main secondary characters in that had that same kind of half face.
It was like a flip on the Phantom of the Opera mask, where it's the bottom quadrant of her face. But another thing that we should mention about Wonder Woman is that it does have a lot of good humor about it. And I think that Gadot has a lot to do with that, because she, like we said, has to kind of walk this tightrope between being oblivious and being, you know, very worldly.
And Chris Pine
is a really good foil.
Yes. You know, there's so many scenes in which he's looking at her. For example, the scene in which she wants to walk out in the street with the sword and she can't get through the revolving doors.
Yeah.
And I mean,
it's a very Crocodile Dundee moment
right
there, you know.
Exactly. I just think that the acting that both Gadot and Pine are required to do in this movie is the kind of acting that never gets mentioned at awards time, but it is really hard to pull off.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they are good together. And the other thing that's great, I think, about Chris Pine's character is that he's written in a way so that he's allowed to become a full character, but it's not his movie. It's her movie.
Yeah.
He's definitely secondary, but he still has a complete story. It's wonderful how they play with this notion of genders. Because these movies are
dynamics.
Always built around
Absolutely.
Men, and the women are the secondary characters. And now it's exactly the opposite, but he's still a complete character.
I was reminded a lot, especially in the early sequences, which are set on this hidden Amazon island, and it's completely run by women.
Like King Kong's island, you know, it's so hidden.
Completely run by women. And I had flashbacks to Mad Max Fury Road, where there were long sequences in that movie where Tom Hardy was the only man on screen.
Right.
And in this case, I mean, Chris Pine is the first man to show up, and there are long stretches where he's the only man in the in the thing. And you've got these warrior women. There's Robin Wright and Connie Nielsen.
Wright.
And they're just kicking butt all over this island, and it's super cool to watch. So we talked about the good humor of this movie and the cool action of this movie, but I think what sets Wonder Woman apart from other superhero movies, and particularly the other DC superhero movies, is the sincerity with which it approaches its central message, which is about compassion and understanding,
mm-hmm.
and this idea that human evil is something that is always going to exist, but we have to stomp it out wherever we can. But humanity is mostly good. And it comes at it in a way that I wasn't expecting. And it would be really easy to kind of scoff at it or to say that it's corny. I actually read an interview in the New York Times with Patty Jenkins where she talked about the word corny and how it's a shorthand for sincere.
Right.
But I think this movie pulls it off. I think the sincerity totally works.
I totally agree. I think one of the problems all over the years within television and comic books, whatever, was always with the Superman character, and why people preferred Batman was because he expressed that dark side, which is easier to do. And Superman was just a nice guy. Who cares? She is a nice person who can really, really wield a sword.
Yeah.
And it's refreshing, and yet it gives a new meaning to the notion of compassionate and empathetic.
And we should say, too, I mean, after seeing this, that there are so few women behind the camera these days, especially when it comes to big Hollywood properties. And Patty Jenkins hasn't made a feature film since 2003.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if – I doubt that was by choice.
And that movie was not a big blockbuster.
No, but it made – Monster made a good amount of money.
Sure.
It won an Oscar. I mean, a lot of people saw it. And so
but
hopefully –
it was a small art film.
And hopefully this changes things for the better in that department.
As long as they're good films, I don't care who makes them.
But we should be giving women more chances because
they're
not being given enough.
Absolutely. And that was Wonder Woman. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. But before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and Alien Covenant. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Nathan Weinbinder and I discussed Wonder Woman. Let's now move to a couple of other sci-fi fantasy-based releases, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and Alien Covenant. First up, Jokes in the Greater Galaxy. One of the best films out of 2014 was the original Guardians of the Galaxy, which was a spot-on blend of action, adventure, and humor, melding the comic talents of Chris Pratt as Peter Quill with a perfect cast of actors from Zoe Saldana and Bradley Cooper to former wrestling star Dave Bautista and the vocal efforts of Vin Diesel. Volume 2 picks up where the first film left off, with our merry band of misfits working as, more or less, justice-seeking mercenaries. The less part of the equation is the complicating factor, thanks to Cooper's rabid raccoon character Rocket, which sets the crew against the race of beings known as the Sovereign. The more involves a character appropriately named Ego, played by Kurt Russell, who claims to be Peter's father. So we have the Guardians fleeing the Sovereign, Saldana's character Gamora attempting to somehow resolve her troubled relationship with her sister Nebula, played by former Doctor Who actress Karen Gillan, and Peter having to face the question of his conception. All this family drama and more is played out to one of Peter's mixed tapes of 80s tunes, and while writer-director James Gunn can't quite capture the originality of Volume 1, he does manage to keep things entertaining enough, especially when he lets Jokester Pratt take the screen.
First of all, they're 70s tunes, mostly 70s songs. I just had to correct you on that front there. You should know you were alive in that decade.
Yes, but I'm so tired right now, I can't even remember what your name is, Nathan.
That's right. Dan just came back from Italy, so I'll let that fly. Okay, here's the thing about Guardians Volume 2. Of course, it's called Volume 2 because Peter Quill's mixtapes are all awesome mix volume XYZ. Mm-hmm. I was aware the entire time this movie was playing that I was being manipulated. I recognized every single calculation. I mean, these movies almost follow a formula where it's like, insert joke here, insert action sequence here. Here's the point when we reveal who the true villain really is. I mean, we saw that in Wonder Woman, which we talked about earlier, and it happens again here where the villain turns out to be not who you originally expected to. And yet, I ate this movie up.
Yep.
This movie was manipulating me and I went right along with it. And I think I like this even better than the first one. It basically takes it does what every big blockbuster sequel does, which it takes everything that worked in the first film and then just amplifies it, just doubles it. And so you might find this to be a lot more of the same. And yet the formula worked the first time. I think it works again. And the thing I like about this one is that it feels more like a hangout movie than the previous one did, because we've already had these characters established for us. We already understand their dynamics, both individually and in respect to how they relate to one another. And so James Gunn can just get right into the comedy, because this movie is really, really funny. From beginning to end, it's funny. These hangout sequences are interrupted by action scenes, but Gunn has this great way of finding these novel twists to big action scenes that we have seen many times before from Marvel and from DC. I mean, there's a sequence in this movie where everything comes down to a bomb, and the bomb has one of those red digital countdown clocks. Now, I suspect that Gunn is employing that ironically, right?
Yes.
He understands that it's
right.
a cliche.
Yeah.
But the whole way that that builds up and what he chooses to focus on, which is little baby Groot, which I love baby Groot, Vin Diesel. He has to deploy this bomb, and yet he can't remember which button to push. And it involves this mad search for a roll of scotch tape while the universe hangs in the balance. And I just love the way that Gunn is able to kind of mix up the ingredients that we've seen before.
And with all that, there are serious moments too. There are serious moments in which we find out what Rocket's pain is, what we find out what Drax's pain is, played by Dave Bautista.
And he's so good in this movie.
He cannot understand subtlety. He can, you know, and so when somebody says that went right over his head, he said, no, nothing goes over my head. My reflexes are too quick.
And he's also trying to play practical jokes on people, but he's too literal-minded to make it work. And all of the stuff with Drax is really funny this time around.
That's right. When he's making comments on who's the character, Firefly or somebody whose ego's assistant.
Oh, yeah, right. What is her name?
Mayfly or something.
Yeah, yeah.
At any rate, you know, he's...
And she's really good,
saying,
too.
You're hideous.
Yeah.
But it's really hilarious.
And another reason that I think this movie is better than Guardians 1, even though Guardians 1, I think I rewatched it before going to see the second one, and it holds up beautifully, too. Both movies have their third act issues. Both movies have issues in terms of not really having a substantial villain until the very last part of the movie. But the ingredient that this one has that the previous one didn't, Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell strolls into this movie and practically walks away with it. I mean, he's so good playing this guy named Ego, who has a planet named after him, because of course he does. And I just love the swagger that Kurt Russell brings to these movies. And I think if you liked the original one, you're going to like this one, whether or not you think it's better, I guess. I've talked to lots of people since this film came out, because I was really enthusiastic about it. And some people said that they still preferred the first one. A couple people said this one was better. So would you say that the first one is still better?
No, I wouldn't say it was necessarily better. I would just say it set the bar for originality that this movie just follows into. The question is, what are they going to do for Guardians of the Galaxy 3?
Yeah.
That's going to be what's really interesting. For me, the question of which one is better is, it's a moot point, because they're both so good.
Yeah.
And there are characters that you want to watch again. I want to see 3 again.
That's the key.
Yes. And that was Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Let's close with something completely different, Alien Covenant. By now, I've lost count of the various Alien sequels and offshoots. Nothing I've seen, though, can match the space horror film that started it all, 1979's Alien, though James Cameron's 1986 follow-up, the action-adventure Aliens, comes the closest. Still, director Ridley Scott, never one to fear jumping the shark, keeps churning them out. He gave us 2012's Prometheus, and now the film's companion, Alien Covenant. In it, we have another spaceship, this one holding a collection of colonists, headed for a distant world, which suffers a deep space mishap, loses its captain, James Franco in an amusing cameo, goes off course to investigate a mysterious radio signal, where have we heard that before, and ultimately witnesses a series of some of the stupidest decisions made by characters who clearly have never seen any horror film ever made, much less any of the other Alien offerings. Oh, the acting is decent enough, although Catherine Waterston plays a pale reflection of Sigourney Weaver's trailblazing Ripley character. The CGI effects are state-of-the-art, and Scott is smart enough to feature not one, but two Michael Fassbenders, each as an android representing the Cain and Abel qualities of artificial intelligence. Overall, though, the film presents questions and answers that are both too open-ended and obscure at once, and as I said, characters who embody the very essence of social Darwinism.
I'm right with you on this one. I think it is probably a bit of a step up from Prometheus, which, although beautifully directed by Ridley Scott, was hampered by a pretty ridiculous script. And this movie kind of takes the Alien series back to its roots, which is it's essentially a slasher movie in space, and the slasher is a monster that gets onto the ship and these people are stuck there. But I've found that as this series has rolled along, the more elaborate the alien mythology becomes, the less interesting it is.
Exactly.
I mean, the whole point of the original Alien was less is more, right?
Right.
Does it matter where the alien comes from, what its origins are, how it gets around? I mean, mm-hmm. I don't really care. This movie is basically a cover version of the original Alien, but when it's playing that tune, I think it's at its best. And the alien effects here and the way that Scott shoots them, and as I understand it, there's a lot of practical effects here mixed with the CGI. The aliens look really cool in this movie, and the violence is really graphic. I mean, this might be
yes.
the most, maybe not the most violent, because I think Aliens, the James Cameron one, is probably the bloodiest and goriest, but this is the most visceral violence
yeah.
that we've seen from any of the Alien
we
movies.
We didn't have, in Aliens, we didn't have people taking a shower in space.
Yeah,
you know,
what was
I mean,
that about?
You could go online and you can find all sorts of ideas and notions and theories and philosophies about what's going on. And Scott gives interviews. I don't care. I don't care. 1979's movie was, as you say, people get off a spaceship and they're dressed as they should be in space suits because even if it's a planet that is supposedly friendly to human beings, microbes are going to kill you.
Right.
And it's just one stupid thing after another.
And you know, the thing is, Scott has done heady sci-fi before. I mean, look at Blade Runner,
which is
a beautiful
Alien
mix
and Blade Runner,
of
yes.
you know, action and thought-provoking stuff. This movie goes for
those
thought-provoking
movies were 40
a lot.
Years ago.
Well, but this movie goes for thought-provoking stuff, and it asks questions but doesn't really have anything to back them up. And also, like you said, who really cares? I just want to see aliens attack people, basically.
Yeah,
and we get
exactly.
some of that, and when it does that, it's real good.
And, you know, I especially liked it when we had the original Wonder Woman, Ripley, facing mm-hmm. off against this monstrous predator.
Yeah, and Catherine Waterston is no Ripley.
No, not
it's almost unfair to put her in that role because you know she's going to be compared to Sigourney Weaver,
yeah.
and nobody compares to Sigourney
right.
Weaver.
And that was Alien Covenant, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder and I discussed Wonder Woman and Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Let's take this moment to thank Jim Tevenin for both producing and engineering. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. And we invite you back next week, same time, same spot in the radio dial, when we'll again agree to share aisle seats with you at the movies. Until then, remember these words from Wonder Woman creator William Moulton Marston. Not even girls want to be girls so long as our feminine archetype lacks force, strength, and power. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.